Hi, and welcome to Deep Dive with Jamie Stein, where we take a deep dive look at all things reality TV, pop culture, and the world at large. I'm an intuitive and an empath, which means I pick up on the thoughts, feelings, and energy percolating in other people and the world around me. I believe there is meaning waiting to be found at every turn if you're willing to see it. So join me as we dismantle everything from trash TV to high spiritual concepts and learn more about ourselves, each other, and how we're all connected. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Deep Dive with Jamie Stein. Today feels like an important and necessary episode. I'm recording this the week that Vanderpump Rules Season 10 has finally closed out. We just got the Secrets Revealed episode last night, although admittedly, I haven't watched it yet, so that will not factor into our conversation today. But we all know that Scandoval has ruled the pop culture universe for the last few months. We got the anticipated three-part reunion. We got the anticipated shocker ending. And I definitely received a lot of messages from people in the last week or so feeling unsettled, unresolved, feeling sort of, a little agitated and quite not knowing where to go in the wake of all of it. And it's just felt to me that, there's some sort of need or desire for a deeper level of integration or processing what we've just seen or trying to make sense of it all. I think especially because, as we saw in the last few minutes, especially, there's still a lot of truth being disowned from the Sandoval side of things. And then, of course, as many people were aware of, there was just, the whole reunion was filmed just weeks after the revelation. Emotions were so strong. Everything was so fresh. Added on top of that, you have people like Lala and James who are just prone towards reactivity anyway. So I think for many people, the reunion played out in such a way where no one could really even get a word in edgewise before you had kind of the peanut gallery coming in a very strong and abrasive way and sort of drowning out a lot of the voices that perhaps wanted to come through and perhaps wanted to be heard. Not just Sandoval and Raquel, but even Katie, for example. Schwartz, I think Schwartz probably enjoyed this, but, Schwartz very much kind of slipped through the cracks. We just didn't hear from everyone so much. And like I said, I think it just led to a sensation for a lot of people of just feeling like we've been invested in this energetic ride for a few months. And then the reunion came and went in a kind of a whirlwind blaze of heightened emotions. And now we're just kind of left to sort through the rubble. So having said that, I of course felt it would be prudent and wise to close out the Scandoval chapter of the deep dive with an episode aimed towards not just looking at these reunions, but also really kind of maybe contextualizing the entire journey of the show. I have a guest today who I think is perfectly suited to help me do that for a few reasons. Just to give a little bit of context about how I know today's guest, I'm very excited because this is another fresh new voice who's never been on, but we've been talking about it for a minute now. She is actually someone who I first met socially back when I was living in Laurel Canyon, which for people who don't live in LA is this sort of creative artistic enclave in the hills above West Hollywood. And I was renting a room from a good friend of mine who is an actress and a writer and a filmmaker and a songwriter. And so she, of course, has all sorts of fabulous creative friends. And I met today's guest at a party. I think I actually first, my introduction to her was her performing at this party. I turned around, she was singing. She's got an insanely amazing voice and stage presence. It's impossible not to notice her. And we got to know each other. And one of the gifts of what I do is I never know who's going to emerge as a secret surprise Housewives fan. So she had started following my content and then, letting me know that she responded to it. And we started having Housewives conversations. Not only that, but she has a huge spiritual bent. She ended up coming to me for a reading. So I got to know her in that space, which is always special when I can do that with people. And just over the ensuing years, she'll send me messages. She'll send me DMs with her own intuitive takes. And they're always very insightful and very unique. And I've known I've wanted her on the podcast for a while. And leading up to this episode, she was actually scheduled to come on a few months ago. We were going to do an episode specifically about Potomac and about Robin. And that is when Scandoval suddenly broke. And I reached out to her and I said, hey, you know, this thing is breaking. I feel like I gotta attend to it. Do you watch Vanderpump Rules? And she said, no, actually, I don't watch Vanderpump Rules. I was like, okay, well, we're gonna rain check this and I'm gonna come back to you, you know, once this is all blown over. She quite bravely and boldly sees this opportunity to jump into the world of Vanderpump Rules. And she has watched the entire series from season one through season 10 in the last 2 months. So she is fresh off the Vanderpump Rules boat. She watched it through the Scandoval lens. And at the same time, because I was recording so much content about Scandoval, I've been doing my own rewatch. Now, I did not fully get through all 10 seasons. Right now I'm in the middle of season 7, but I feel fairly brushed up. So I feel like we're just kind of in the perfect moment to sort of dive into all this and just, yeah, see what kind of deeper, see if we can start untangling some threads that have been left unresolved for people and see what kind of deeper meaning we can find in all of it, if any. So having said all that, with no further ado, let me welcome to the podcast, Molly Durand. Hi, Molly.
Yay! Thank you so much. I just want to say that I actually had deep shame around watching reality TV show, because I didn't start until a couple years back. And I felt like this extreme shame, like I was doing something wrong. You know, I toured with Second City and I came from a theater background. So I sort of had this idea that like reality TV show is bad and theatrical shows are good. And what I really am grateful for is your specific way. I personally think the work that you're doing is like extremely important. And the reason is because the illusion of separation, like the illusion that I think I'm any different or that we think we're any different than good TV versus bad TV. And all of these illusions I feel have been broken down in society. And I do think that these shows are a mirror. And I have learned about myself in the last 2 months watching this godforsaken show. I have learned so much about myself that I was like, oh my God, I am triggered by Britney. I'm triggered by love. Like the things that triggered me were very interesting. And they showed me more about the pockets of my own shadow, the pockets of my own past. And usually it was the people that had emulated things that I've done. You know, whether it be like being with somebody who's lying or being the person who's on a high horse, but it was the way in which you spoke about these things. And what you're doing is you're bringing this thing that could otherwise be just like a throwaway of like, oh, those people are down here and we're up here. And what you're doing is sort of really important. And it's really kind of what I think we'll probably end up talking about with that reunion. Like the vocabulary that Stassi sort of brought, bad person, you've mentioned this too. That was like the number one thing I noticed in Vanderpump Rules universe with Lisa Vanderpump at the helm was like the language and the vocabulary and the rules. It's literally called Vanderpump Rules, right? And it's its own fishbowl of society that they created. And there were some alphas that created and everybody kept switching, like changing of the guards. That's how I see the show, is they change the guards. Everybody will be up here and everybody will be down there. And if you're down here, you can maybe come back up here again because everybody's done all this. It's, you know, it's very interesting. So anyways, to wrap that up, I'm just grateful to you because I swear to God, I have learned so much about life. I've learned how to be in a workplace better because of the depth in which we're taking these types of shows, learning how to be in society, learning how to be with strategic people, learning how to be in relation to little groups, the group dynamics, you know, something that I'm not always good with. So it's been a wild ride, I have to say. Like there were some dark nights watching that show. And then I found myself so endeared to every single one of these people.
Right.
Like all of a sudden I started thinking about them and they were like in my, like I deeply care about every single one of them. And then the ones that I was so enraged by, it's just like what it brought up in me, like blew my mind. I think it is a mirror. So I think I'm just happy to be here. I'm so excited to see where this goes.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's so much I could say. I will say from my vantage point of revisiting the show, what was so interesting to me, look, I actually like you, I binge watched the show originally because I came on late. I tried to watch it when it first aired. And honestly, I was so creeped out by Lisa in the pilot episode being so involved with her employees' private lives that I was like, I can't watch this. This is too creepy. And so I stayed away from it. And then eventually I binge watched it because, I knew people who worked on it and everyone was talking about it. And it's interesting because at the time, I liked it enough to binge watch it for sure, you know, and to be invested in it. But I will be honest, I never really got what all the fuss was about until this, like when I rewatched it over these last few months. It reminds me of Thelma and Thelma and Louise after she sleeps with Brad Pitt and has like her first great sexual experience. And she comes out and she's like, now I get know what all the fuss is about. I was like, oh my God, now I know what all the fuss is about. I mean, I don't know where my head was at when I first watched this, but I was just like, this universe is so, I mean, to your point, I think what I loved about it was like, it's so chaotic. You could not write these people to save your life. And yeah, they're so like the commitment to lying and deceit, I'm kind of diagnosing people, but the unnamed addictions, I mean, just the level of kind of like emotional chaos. But then within that, to your point, feeling for me anyway, where there is love, where they love each other, where they want to be seen, where they want to be heard, where they actually do have good intentions at times. And so to me, like the words I always hear when I watch the show is twisted heart, like it just feels like a living embodiment of like this dark Los Angeles twisted heart where it's like they love hard, they fight hard.
Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like they want to love, but they don't know how to do it. And it's funny. Like, they're also funny. Mm. And I mean, I know I want to get to the reunion. There's so much we could say. But also to your point, I'm always thinking about Lisa Vanderpump and all of this because it is her universe. And I'm always like, what is this reflecting inside of her? And I mean, I've been thinking about that a lot with Scandoval in particular. But bigger picture, I just think about her relationship to the Twisted Heart and how she is someone who I've experienced as having a lot of love that she loves to give to her animals, to Ken, to her children, even the people that she takes in. But there's a cost to the love and there's a cruelty to the love, you know? And it's like, you kind of just feel that shadow over all of this. So this is kind of just my way of agreeing with you. And I think also just to say, I'm still forming my thoughts about this, but I want to just say more and more, I do believe reality TV is like, there's something about it. I mean, we saw this with Scandoval. I think it's plugged into something. I think there is something so deeply spiritual about it in terms of it being the simulation within the simulation. And I have a feeling I'm going to develop a lot more clarity around this as the years go by. But I just want to say yes to it all. And
ironically, it came about after the writer's strike, too.
That's literally what I was going to say. I was going to say what I, you know, and I, by the way, I had my own judgments about reality TV. Like, I don't know if I talk about this on the podcast. I am like a film buff. I mean, I love film. I love movies. I love world cinema. Like, I was never, I mean, okay, truth be told, I was a Real World fan growing up, but I didn't watch Survivor when it first premiered. I wasn't into Housewives. One of my best friends, Liz Garcia, shout out to Liz Garcia. She's the one who introduced me to The Real Housewives. And when she started watching it, I mean, I remember feeling like judgy. I was just like, no, that's trashy. Like, I'm not going towards that. But as obviously I bought into it eventually and I learned the language of it. And I was going to say exactly what you just pointed out. Like, people talk about, oh, that takes jobs away from writers and da 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 da. And I want to say, actually, we're in a golden age of fictional television that we've been in for a while. I don't think it's a coincidence that the golden age of television came in on the heels of reality TV. Like, I feel like reality TV, if we think of reality TV as the shadow of mainstream narrative television, I feel like reality TV came in as that little like Tasmanian devil and forced mainstream or dramatic TV to like up its game. And to me, it's just such a yin and a yang. Like, we have The Sopranos because we have Survivor. Like, I totally feel that completely. So I think we owe a debt of gratitude to reality TV in so many different fucking ways.
I love that. I love that. The number one thing I got when I first started watching season one, all the way to the end. And it was just like literally like pounding at me the entire time because I was in Hollywood at the same age. These are my age. These people are my age. I was here in Hollywood at the same time in a group of my own servers as we were all like, sometimes we'd be on tour, sometimes we wouldn't, but we were doing our craft. We were mastering our craft. So we didn't play out the dramas of life this way. We did plenty of stupid shit. But we when I was watching these people, I knew them very well. Like I felt like I've met them before, right? And I saw them not mastering their craft. They all came here to be artists, but they weren't working towards their craft. And when you don't work towards your craft, if you want to be an artist, it's a dangerous thing because you will play out the drama, the psychological drama in your life somehow, some way to stay entertained if you want to be an entertainer. So that's what I saw the most. Anytime an artist is not working on their craft, it can become very dangerous. And that's what I felt like was the predominant thing, specifically with Ariana and Tom, specifically with them, specifically with her, because I think she's a writer. And like, I think there's all this disowning of craft that unfortunately, like if you disown your craft, it's going to come out in the psychodrama of life. So,
and I would add to that, these are all powerful people. You know, they're very powerful. I mean, just look at what they're manifesting, even at like kind of the,
yes.
I mean, I hate using this word, but like the vibrational level they're at, like with like, I mean, they're manifesting so much success for themselves. And,
yeah.
you know, to your point, larger than life drama that's like making headline news. So these are people that have energy that like wants to flow in a really big, bold way. And yeah, now their dramas are playing out for all of us to see on a global level. So okay, good. This has been very energizing. I'm now like ready to sort of dive in head on. I think my first impulse is really maybe just to start with the titular character, you know, Tom Sandoval. He puts the Sandoval and Scandoval. I said I was energized and now I'm like getting overwhelmed because there's so much. It's so big. I mean, I received a lot of messages about him. Obviously, his level of deception through the very end. There's definitely been questions I've been receiving from people around, was he exactly always this way? Are we watching something unfold? Which for me, I do think we're watching someone really turn a dark corner. I mean, I think the seeds were always there for sure. The relationship to secrecy, the relationship to rage, the relationship to infidelity, of course. But it really feels like he's doubling down on something that's sort of taking his emotional and spiritual life to, like, I feel like we're in the origin story of Darth Vader right now. And I know you shared some thoughts with me just even when you started rewatching it about your experience of Tom, like seeing him from the beginning. So maybe we should just, yeah, start there, start with him, start with his journey. And I guess I just have an impulse as someone who just watched the show beginning to end, just to sort of check in with you big picture wise. Like, where are you with Tom Sandoval? What was your experience of him season 1 through season 10?
Listen, I was raised by Tom Sandoval, the most charming man on the planet. If I ever feel, from my personal triggers of the people that, and the makeup that made me, was I came from a very specific masculine whom I very much love, my father. And if I ever feel pity or sympathetic towards a man in particular, I know that they may share traits similar to my father, who was very much a womanizer and all of the things. And I would say the correlation that I see similar. When somebody like this, who is deeply craving to be seen and mostly driven by fear that they won't be loved and that there won't, because there's a gaping feeling of unfulfillment inside of them and yet a strong desire to never stop moving. It's almost like the Knight of Wands energy, like it wants to move and shake and be in the four corners of the earth, and it wants to bring its passion everywhere it goes, and it wants to be met with that passion. It's almost like the beginning of a Kundalini awakening, like that never ends with no grounding. There's no grounding. And so when you are that energy that is almost insatiable and can't be satiated, right, there is a... I'm trying not to sound so esoteric about it because I very much like Tom for most of the ride. It was season 8 where I felt he had taken a massive turn.
Exactly.
I thought maybe Coke was involved around season 8. Yeah, I thought that he wanted to emulate Jax early on. I felt that Jax was very much... Jax and Kristen and Stassi played a big role in everybody's behavior because they set the rules also, because whoever dominated got to set the rules, right? Because if you dominated... you would bully. I mean, Sheena was bullied. People were bullied. And eventually they learned, like, I don't like being bullied. So I better fall in line somehow or find my groove here. And I have to abide by the rules. So Tom, I felt like saw the injustice of it all. And he's a philosopher in a lot of ways, not terribly. I'm not saying he's this big, bright, beautiful. I'm just saying, like, he can see, I think he's strategic and can see past the projections of others, maybe just not his own. And I think that a lot of people like that are that way, that I think he really does feel that he is the victim. I think when people like that lie, they don't feel that they're lying. They feel that they are.
Exactly.
That everybody else is hypocritical. You're also hypocritical. Like, if I have to hold on to this to have my voice and to be seen, I'm going to hold on to it for dear life because I'm the victim. I'm the victim of Kristen. I'm the victim of Jax and the hypocrisy. I'm the victim of all these people, of Lisa, which I very much felt like he resented Lisa throughout the entire thing. Like, I felt that from day one. And Ariana and him very much had an allegiance in how they viewed the world. That was their bond. They viewed this world very similarly. But just to wrap it up, I think Tom believes his own victimization in order to survive. I think that his emotional world, oh God, I guess it was like when I went to Pat Allen, you know, Pat Allen, and I told her about my dad. Pat Allen is like an old school psychologist who wrote the book, like Getting to I Do. And she had all these like ways of the masculine and the feminine. And it's probably old school now, but I told her about my dad and she said, well, your father's a woman and you're addicted to norepinephrine. You're addicted to longing. But she basically nailed it. Like, my mother was very masculine, all these things. And so Tom and his relationship to his mother, which you've dived into, and his relationship to, I believe, wanting to be that strong feminine, which we saw in his drag performances. Like, I do believe that he wanted to be seen the same way he saw strong women. But I felt like he still, to this day, never felt fully seen. And that is driving him in all these weird ways. And I also do think that he, in season 8, was so excited when Jax was out because he wanted to be that top dog for all those years. And I do think he got lost in the universe. That's what I think.
Oh, man. Okay. Yeah. There's so much here. It's so interesting. So I'll start to touch on kind of my experience of the rewatch that kind of connects to some of what you're bringing in. And then we'll see where it goes. I agree with everything that you're saying, including season 8. Because for me, it was really interesting to watch seasons 1 through 3. I saw him differently, seasons of 1 through 3, than I had seen him the first time. But then when he settled into his relationship with Ariana, seasons 4 through 7, I'm like, oh, this is the sweet spot of Tom where I'm remembering all the things I loved about him originally. And then, season 8 is where I feel like the train starts to go off the track in a deeper way. But there were several things that I was so struck by, seasons 1 to 3, particularly when he's in his relationship with Kristen still, where, you know, and again, I'm just going to sort of say this for the sake of exploration. As everyone knows, I'm not into diagnosing people. And, you know, it's for everyone to identify the way that they feel is right for them to identify. But, you know, watching Tom in this relationship with Kristen the first few seasons, I was like, this guy to me just feels like such like a love and sex addict. It was just like his behavior, kind of like what you're saying, like there's all this energy that wants to move, but I was like, he's making no sense. On the one hand, he's like fighting so hard for this relationship, and yet he's miserable in the relationship and he completely resents her. Meanwhile, he's also cheating on her left and right, but then in the same breath, he's furious when she might be cheating on him. And I'm like, taking him in this time around, I'm like, this guy, I mean, I'm saying it was sort of love because it's still endearing to me because I do appreciate his passion and his rage and his strong energy. But I'm like, this guy is fucking nuts. Like, it's just so clear to me those first few seasons. Like, you're in some sort of hall of mirrors where you are not connected to any kind of like emotional grounding or clear motive. It's like kind of like what you're saying. What shiny object is in front of you in the moment? And so it is clear to me, I think, it feels potentially clear to me that, yeah, this is a guy who certainly fixates on women, romance, and relationship as kind of like the dangling carrot to keep sort of chasing and for his energy to go into. And so, yeah, I think obviously we're seeing that now, like Raquel became the new shiny object. And I do have things to say about the arc of women he's chosen, from Kristen to Ariana to Raquel. That's also part of why I think we're watching him devolve over time, because his choice in women energetically is changing. And I think it's changing in a really interesting way. But we'll get there in a moment. But what I want to say, kind of to like sort of connect all this and to circle back around to what you were bringing in, what I was so aware of from the beginning, because you talked about him wanting to be seen, wanting to be heard, wanting to be loved. And what I was just so aware of from the beginning, and again, it to me connects so explicitly to what we're watching right now, is that split in him, or that division in him, between the good boy and the bad boy, and how those parts of him are so not integrated. And it's like what I saw with Kristen, it's like, oh, okay, I'm just going to go. Every time I start talking about Tom, I start feeling his like unwieldy energy. And I'm just like, I'm running with it. I'm just going to say everything and then you can respond. You know, I think, you know, because there's all these questions, right? People are like labeling him a narcissist, and there are people are questioning whether he even has the capacity to love. I mean, the way that I experience it, the way that I feel it, I do feel Tom's heart. And I think that there's genuine love in him, just like I think there's genuine love in Lisa Vanderpump. Now, having said that, do I think that his love is bound up in other things? Abso-fucking-lutely. And so with him, it's almost like what I experience with him, it's like there are conditions attached to his love at this point, and there are conditions attached to his generosity. And so it's sort of like, I'm going to be the good boy, but to your point, you better fucking see me for it. You better fucking hear me for it. And you better fucking like love me for it. Mm-hmm. Like there is an agenda here in my goodness. And I think what happens for him is if he doesn't feel like his quote unquote good intentions and his cultivation of a certain type of goodness, if he doesn't feel that that's seen and heard, I think what happens is it gives him permission to indulge the devil on his shoulder. So that's where I'm going to go and cheat on you. And I'm going to like it, and I'm going to have fun with it, and I'm owed it, and I'm entitled to it because you didn't fucking see me. Now, the bind here is that then when he gets caught being the bad boy, right, he gets in trouble for it. And so then I think that feeds into the part of him that has shame over being the bad boy, right? So then he shifts back into, oh my God, let me make up for it. Let me make up for it. So, you know, in the early seasons, what this looks like to me is like he's unhappy in his relationship with Kristen. So then he sleeps with the bottle girl from Vegas. Then he gets caught sleeping with the bottle girl. So now it's, okay, I'm going to go to IKEA. I'm going to fix the IKEA table. Look, Kristen, I bought these sconces. I'm putting time and energy into our home. It's like, again, it's like, let me be good, let me be good, let me be good.
A pattern.
Yeah, and again, you better see it, you better see it. And then when you don't see it, that's when I'm going to get pissed off again. So what I'm so aware of in him, it's like there's almost this symbiotic relationship between the angel on his shoulder and the devil on his shoulder. And they feed and fuel each other, but there's a lack of integration there. And then that's what I'm seeing play out right now in terms of how he's doubling down in this situation with Raquel. I feel like the pattern that I just talked about with Kristen was very much alive in his relationship with Ariana. And I've talked about this before on the podcast.
Yeah.
So I won't get too detailed, but just to kind of big picture summarize, my kind of intuitive hunch about Tom is like, he got into this relationship with Ariana. Essentially, he thought it was going to be one thing. Because again, he's chasing that shiny object. He thought, I guess this is speaking to the evolution of taste in women. He was with this sort of dark, chaotic feminine force with Kristen that couldn't be controlled or contained, which I have a sense like he's actually into that. Like I've talked about this on the podcast before. I sometimes sense like an underground attraction to Stassi, like era season one. I think that Tom is drawn to that dark.
Oh, 110%.
Yeah, like that he's drawn to that dark, feisty feminine. And I think he couldn't control the situation with Kristen. So then suddenly he's with Ariana, who's like the contrast to Chris. She's the cool girl. Like the very thing that makes her attractive is how chill she is. And she's still a powerful woman. We know that Ariana's a powerful woman. We know she actually has tempests inside of her. But unlike Kristen, she doesn't let the tempests rule her, right? So it's suddenly like, okay, she's the answer, right?
Very controlled.
Exactly. And so then my experience for Tom in that relationship is, wait a second, I thought this was going to be one thing. You were the cool, sexy girl. This was going to be the happy ending. But then it's not everything that it's cracked up to be, right? And we've explored this. I mean, that could have to do with like her shutting down sexually. It could have to do with her mental health issues. It just energetically, in Tom's mind, potentially, she is not what was promised. And then there's that part of him that feels set up and betrayed. And he's also talked about feeling emasculated, feeling dismissed, feeling disrespected. And I think we're going to get into some of that because I think you and I agree. I think there's actually some truth to that. It doesn't justify what he went and did. But I think, look, we both agree Tom's a magician. I think one of his greatest magic tricks is he knows how to blend fact and fiction in a way that serves him very well. So that means he's lying a lot of the time, but it also means he's weaving in some truths that he's using in a way that serves him really well. So I think there is some truth to what he was saying. And so then what he does is he has this kind of, I think, covertly spiteful affair with Raquel. It's like, oh, you're not going to see me, Ariana. You're not going to see my good intentions. You're not going to give me the reward I was looking for. Fuck you. I'm indulging that devil more than I ever have. Now, this is where I think it gets tricky, right? So one thing I want to say is just to complete the arc about the evolution of the woman, obviously Raquel is the next step. We've gone from the totally uncontrolled, unbridled chaos of Kristen to the kind of modulated, quiet storm of Ariana, who's still a powerful woman, to what we now know is like the completely disconnected, infantilized. I do think Raquel actually has strong, powerful energy in her, obviously, but it's so buried. And it's basically like a grown man with a little girl where he's going to be in even more control, right? But then what happens is this gets blown up. And everyone suddenly, like Tom is the magician. For the first time in his life, his magic tricks are getting exposed. Because, you know, in the rewatch, you see it's not just blending fact and fiction. One of the other amazing things that he always did, he knew how to hide behind other people's bad behavior. So let me use Kristen as my shield. Let me use Jax as my shield. He was throwing smoke screens
100%.
All over the place to mask. Let me enlist Ariana in my lies in terms of covering the extent of their affair. Like, he is a master magician, right? And he's gotten away with it. And I think that's the key thing here is that he's so good at what historically, he has been so good at what he does that he's always gotten away with it. And now for the first time, he's not getting away with it. And all of his little weird secrets are getting exposed, like the Halloween costume and the necklace and sleeping with Raquel in their home when Ariana's off to her grandmother's funeral. And so I think what's happening, and it's like my sense of Tom, like I said, is he is 100% unwilling to own the bad boy in him, to own the cruelty, to own the hatred, to own the punishment. Because like you said, he's so invested in being seen as good. So what does a guy like this do when suddenly all those shadow aspects of him that he never wants people to see, he doesn't want to know it for himself, is in the light of day? And it's like, I mean, he's got two choices. One, hopefully he goes towards it and owns it. And it's like, holy shit, what am I doing and why? Or he can double down and try to explain it away, minimize it, justify it so that he doesn't have to answer for the quote unquote badness, which is what he's doing. And I think what's happening is the split is becoming so aggravated because there is no hiding from this. You can't justify what you've done. You can't do what you did in the past. The jig's up. Like, those tricks aren't going to work anymore.
No.
But he hasn't realized that yet. And so what I feel like is happening, like at this reunion, like for example, the lie about the timeline, my sense is he's so committed to we only slept once because in that version of reality, they didn't sleep together when Ariana was like mourning her grandmother. It's like he's trying to mitigate the absolute worst of it.
Control.
So he can kind of contain the narrative of his goodness. And in that place, people are seeing through him even more. So that's why I'm saying, I think we're watching him and you see him, he's getting, the more that he gets exposed and the more that people aren't buying it, he's getting angrier and angrier and angrier and more spiteful and more spiteful. Because to your point, he feels misunderstood. There's this little boy in there who's like, no, I have a right to this badness because there was some original place where he was made wrong, right? There was some original place where he got a message, Tom, these parts of you aren't good, where it wasn't fair. It was just Tom being Tom, right? So that like sent him off on this trajectory of, okay, I'm going to disown parts of myself. I'm going to be good. But like, but if you, that's where I think the demand comes from. I'll disown these parts of me that you've told me are bad. I'll be your version of good. But if I do this, you better fucking love me for it. And so then when people don't love him for it, that's where he feels pissed and entitled. And it's kind of like, I can hear this voice. It's like, if I own how dark this got, it almost is confirming a story that I am a bad person that once upon a time was an unfair story leveraged against me. Now it's not so unfair because I'm actually doing shit unconsciously that is bad. But to me, internally, to the inner child, it feels so unfair because originally I was good and I had this love to give. So the last thing I'll say, I know I'm saying so much right now, but again, Tom is complicated. So it's hard not to say a lot all at once. I feel like what we're watching right now in terms of this dark corner he's turning is this guy who just refuses to be in ownership of the depth of cruelty, punishment, and entitlement because he refuses to own that there are these dark parts of himself. And because what he's done is so stark in the light of day, he's like splintering. He's splintering. And that's why I'm saying I feel like we're watching him cross over to the dark side because this is the point where I think he starts to lose touch with those other parts of himself that I could feel up until, you know, seasons 8, 9, and 10.
Yeah, it makes me think of, and I literally have this here, the magician card, that literally I opened the deck to, and it makes me think of it reversed. You know, like when the magician, who he very much could have been, and I think he wants to be, but got lost, the magician's connected to infinity, is connected to the universe and has everything at his disposal to create from alignment. Unfortunately, at some point, he decided in this, and I do believe it has something to do with him noticing, like being strategic and noticing the world that he's in, he decided to go the route of manipulation. The magician card reversed is somebody who is very manipulative and needs to be in control and needs to control the narrative and needs to control the illusions. I will say, the thing that I have to say, going back to Ariana, you know, being this, being that to him that's leading to their intimacy issues, like obviously there, I think everybody felt uncomfortable watching that from time to time. I feel, though, both of their rage right now is equal, which is extremely interesting, that his rage at her is almost at the same level, if not equal, I would say it definitely equal, to her rage at him. And that is very interesting to me because I feel that both of them felt, neither one of them were getting their needs met in that relationship, but they were stuck like glue together and both very fear-driven to leave it and very codependent in that relationship. And because it was like that, we're in this fucked up world together. From the beginning of their relationship, it was always like them against everybody else. And they built a system that worked for them, that it was almost like a trauma bond, the two of them, in this fucked up world. And they're going to somehow be the good mom and dad to root against all of the unfairness at James or this or that, depending on the season. Raquel's the sweet one now, so we're going to be her parent. And all of this stuff. But meanwhile, they were never on the same page, ever, ever, ever. Ariana didn't want to get married and have kids. He did. There was never a way, like, and that's just one like sort of material thing, but there was so much more. What I saw when I first, it took me 3 seasons to figure out who the fuck Ariana even was.
I'm still figuring it out.
Well, she'll tell you when she describes Raquel. And I don't, and everybody's going to hate me for saying this, but I believe Ariana to be a queen, as you guys have said. I believe Ariana to be a beautiful artist who has been disempowered, who chose to be in this relationship. She started the season right after on the heels of losing her father, okay? And when you lose, and her father and her had a good relationship, right? When you are in grief and you are finding your way and you are a new artist in Los Angeles and now you're on the show and this man is like enticing and giving you a reason to like have some focus on, it's like, she became the apple of his eye. And when a guy like Tom looks upon you, you feel like you're the most important thing in the world. That's one of his magic tricks, right? Like, he is able to make you feel more special than everybody else. When did him and Raquel start? After she'd been bashed by Lala and all the girls. It's like, at that point, she was at her lowest or low. By the time she met Tom and he shined his little manipulative light on her, she's like, I'll take it. Like, these are women who maybe at the time of meeting this man were very vulnerable. I'm not giving that as... And then I believe Ariana to be one of my favorite people in the entire show, especially that one scene where she says... She's crying at Tom Tom's and she's like, it's not safe here. It's not safe here. And I was like, oh my God, this is my girl. Like, I just understood her so well in that moment. But I do think at the time of meeting Tom, I think she was probably finding her own identity at that time and very vulnerable. And I think that Raquel had lost her identity, if she had one, and was, I don't know about Raquel, I'll be honest with you. I have no fucking clue. I don't think anyone does. I don't think she does. And so, but I do think that he has, after Kristen, and I don't know the beginning stages of him and Kristen, but I can tell you that Kristen catastrophized everything. So she was always in a state of vulnerability and he was always there to be able to just like manage the chaos. And in a way, like, finding people when they're super vulnerable and then being able to mold them or be the shining light. And he does know how to do that. It's interesting to me. Now the rage, I feel the rage that both of them have is that Ariana disempowered herself by being with him and making him her focus instead of her focus. And when a woman like that, who's very powerful as she is and very beautiful and very wonderful, and I love Ariana, when she is with somebody who takes all of the focus, all of the energy out of the room, like if the two of them are in a room, who has the focus, right? That's why she had to be not dominant, but that's why sometimes her rage would come out sideways too, because her needs weren't being met because she wanted intimacy and time together. And he wanted to fly around the universe and be constantly, constantly ignited because he was never full and nothing would ever fill him. And so she's like this grounding force for somebody who's like this. I mean, here she is sitting here like, but she needed to step into her authority. And nobody knows more than I do that I resent people who step into their own authority whenever I'm not stepping into mine. And then I will there very much become subservient to them, but then later resent them.
Yeah, it's so fascinating. So, okay, there's a couple things I'm going to say. So I want to actually complete a thought from before, but it also connects to what you're saying. Because, you know, again, sort of speaking about the darkness of Tom, because I know what a part of what was really unsettling for people in the reunion was certainly like what Raquel came out with at the end and seeing like the level of control that he was exerting over her and, you know, people likening him to a cult leader. And again, just sort of seeing how dark it's gotten. It's like the reason why I'm bringing in this relationship between the good boy and the bad boy. It's like what I see in that. I mean, like the reason why he's trying to control her, right, is he's trying to control the flow of information that's coming out because he's so invested, like I said, in these darker aspects of him not being exposed. And so there's something that just feels important to me to name that I feel like, and I think this is what I'm saying, the level of control that he's now exerting over her, the level of, like you're saying, the sway and the influence, I think is proportionate to how high the stakes feel now, because there was something he was doing in this particular situation that was so much darker than he had ever been doing before. And now everything's been exposed, as I was saying. So he's like a movie character. He's in act three. The stakes are so high. You know, it's like, in act one of Thelma and Louise, they're just getting away to go to the cabin, breaking the rules of their lives. Act two, they're literally fugitives on the road. Act three, they're like going off the Grand Canyon in their quest for freedom. It's like, this is what we do in our journeys. The stakes get higher and we double down on our conviction. So to your point, Tom has always seduced women into something. He's always sort of brought them into a secret world. He's always sort of exerted manipulation. But what I see happening now is, yeah, because the depth of the darkness is so much deeper, because the level of exposure is so much brighter, he has to go in so much harder in trying to like manage all the pieces. In this case, making sure Raquel does and says everything he wants her to do and say to support the image of his goodness. So I guess I'm just saying this to say that, like, yes, he's incredibly dark right now. Yes, he has turned a corner. Yes, he's venturing into cult leader territory. And yes, I feel like this is a new level that we have not seen before. It's based on the seeds that were always there, but the heightened stakes and his anti-heroic need to double down on what he's doing rather than just surrender. I mean, that would be, if this were like a happy ending in a movie, he would finally have his Will Hunting moment where
that would be
he
it.
Cries and says, you know, Will Hunting cries and says, oh, you know, what is it? Like, oh, it's not your fault. Tom would cry real tears and say, oh my God, what have I done? What have I done?
Yeah.
Like, I did these horrible things. Like, I've got to look inside myself. But instead, he's like, no, let me manage this even more. Let me manage this even more. Like, and if that means I have to control Raquel and feed her lies, that's exactly what I'm going to do. And so that's what I mean when I say we're watching him become like an even bigger villain than he's ever been before in his life. And that's the self-fulfilling prophecy. He's becoming the bad guy he was made to feel like when he was younger.
Yes, yes, yes. And you are literally describing addiction. So I'm 18 years sober. And alcoholism, addiction of any sort, is a progressive disease, a feeling of dis-ease. If you feel uneasy in your own skin, and the anecdote is to go outward, you will continue to feel more dis-ease, and the disease is progressive. It only gets worse. That's why you see people who might even be sober 10 years, they go out and drink and they die, or at least I've seen that many times, unfortunately, because it's a progressive disease. That's why even if you are to quit something that you're addicted to and you are taking a path of healing, the diseases sometimes, if you don't deal with the shadow, is also still progressive. So your healing journey has to be progressive as well. So if we're dealing with a man who can't be alone, we're dealing with a man who desperately wants love, doesn't know how to give it to himself, expects these women to give it to him in a certain way. And if they don't, he'll retaliate and get it elsewhere. And he's thinking that eventually he'll meet the right person or the right thing or the right band or the right bar or the right this or the right that in order to chase. He's chasing his progressive addictions. And eventually, the scales of life do eventually balance. And eventually, you can't run anymore. It's so Thelma and Louise. It like literally, like when you said that, I was like, holy shit, like, yes. And he's taking these people hostage. Like, that's why Ariana is so mad. And she should be. And because she sacrificed a lot to be with the fan and then made a lot of deals with him, as we're seeing, where she had to kind of go against her soul and go against her higher self to sort of just be like, okay, whatever. Because they did have so much love there and they were so committed to each other. So she said, okay, I'm a ride or die. I'm going to adhere to your reality, which is not real, because you're so scared of chasing this disease that you got to control and manage everything because you're afraid if you don't, it's going to take over you, because he is literally running from the beast. He refuses to sit and acknowledge. And so she says, okay, yes, I'll make this deal with you. I'll make that deal with you. Miami girl, this, the other person, the things that we won't talk about, the things that we're not doing, the fact that I don't want to sleep with you and have you take more of me because you've already taken so much. It's like eventually she sacrificed herself for all of that, hopefully to stay together. And then he eventually betrays her. I mean, can you imagine? It's like, but to go back to his whole like good and bad, to me, it's just a disowning of the fact that he is literally letting his addictions, if you look at it that way, which you could just say like his disowned shadow, his, like you're saying, like not being able to take a look at the parts of himself that terrify him. And he's looking outwardly. You can't get it that way. It doesn't exist.
Yes. So I want to kind of circle back around to everything that you're bringing in about their relationship. Because, you know, I find it's so fascinating where there are points of intersection between them, but then also, like you said, where they're completely on different pages. I just find that fascinating in and of itself. And then I also find fascinating the part of Ariana that was willing to be in a relationship where they so clearly were on different pages and what that means for her. Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, it's interesting because my intention with this episode was kind of like recontextualizing everything within the show. And I keep noticing wanting to really look at the bookends of early seasons and then where we are now. So I agree with you about Ariana really coming from this place of it's us against the world. So the way that I see Tom and Ariana starting out, I feel like they both have a relationship to, you know, maybe what I would call secrecy. I feel like with Tom, it's secrecy. I feel like with Ariana, I would maybe call it privacy, but it's this idea of a secret world. And I talked about this on Instagram. Like my feeling for Tom is, you know, there's a relationship to secrecy that ultimately for him is kind of self-serving. Yeah, it's about like the thrill of the chase and addiction and cultivating something in secret and claiming his secret claim and getting his needs met in secret.
Yeah.
Whereas with Ariana, what I feel, just like you said, the vibe I get off her is it's the sense of like true relationship and true love is defined by this experience of it's you and I against the world. Like we've got something in our little corner that no one else knows about. It's this unabiding loyalty to one another. And we might present one thing to the world. Like we might be on this reality show. We might give them certain storylines. We might present to our friends, like you're saying, as mom and dad. That's what we're giving to the world. And there maybe there's elements of truth in it. But back at home, behind closed doors, there's an entire world that we just have together that no one else can access. And it's in that kind of privacy and in that private loyal bond that our love is sort of defined for one another. And so I see Tom's relationship to secrecy as self-interested, whereas Ariana's relationship to a type of secrecy is in service of the relationship. Now, what I find fascinating about this is there's a clear point of intersection when they first meet, right? Because Tom's doing his thing where he's cultivating this like addiction to love behind Kristen's back, you know, in the exciting veils of secrecy where he gets to act something out and give a big fuck you for Kristen for not seeing him as good. But meanwhile, this totally serves Ariana's desire to have that like secret private bond with someone. So they get to collude against Kristen because for Tom, she's the woman who's not seeing his goodness and he's pissed at her. For Ariana, she's kind of like the crazy world out there that we get to like have each other's back against. And so this is what's so interesting. In that point of intersection, they both have a relationship to lying. Again, it's different. For Ariana, it's like, I'm going to lie to cover for you, to protect the relationship. Again, this is where I feel our love for each other. Whereas I think for Tom, it's like, I'm going to lie to cover my tracks and to like, you know what I mean? Cover my sort of the footprints of my dirty little boy. And so there's this point of intersection where they connect and it's right, but they're riding different waves. And so to bring this back to current day, the scene that I was so drawn to in season 10 was that scene. So basically, Lala outs the fact that Tom did not go home to comfort Ariana when her grandmother dies, right? And Lala's bringing that up, I think, at Tom or whatever. And it's so fascinating because when Tom and Ariana talk about that at their home, what I was so aware of is they are both writing their own narratives for the sake of the show. It's just they're writing two different narratives. So Tom is trying to spin the narrative that he's got going about their relationship's in trouble and Ariana seems checked out and they have no intimacy. Like he's setting the stage for his departure, right? Where he gets to still be seen as the good misunderstood one, right? Meanwhile, and he's telling his lies. Ariana's over here. She's also fucking lying where she's sort of saying like, Tom, you know I totally get it and I wasn't mad at you for not coming home. Oh, and I'm saying she's lying because Lala has talked about, I forget where, she's talked about that, or who was it? Someone somewhere revealed that someone witnessed Tom on the phone with Ariana at that pool party when he wasn't coming back and that she was screaming at him and she was furious. And so when she's on TV making it seem like it's not a big deal, she understands, she gets it. I'm sitting there thinking, oh, you're lying too. Tom's writing his own narrative about the relationship. You're also writing your own narrative about the relationship. Again, Tom's doing it in a selfish way to cover his tracks. You're doing it in this way to kind of protect something here. But it was another instance for me of like, there's this point of intersection where you two are doing the same fucking thing. You're both control freaks writing a narrative that you want the world to see.
And becoming angrier.
Yeah, but you're doing it. You're on two totally different pages. I just find that fascinating.
It's 100% fascinating. But I will say that like when Ariana was talking to her in that moment, you could see a part of her knowing. I remember watching that. And at the very first episode of season 10, when he's putting on those pants, and let's just say also, there's been a pattern of her losing people, the dog, when she had to go home and I think it was her grandmother to Florida and he went like dirt biking or whatever. And the dog, like, this is a pattern where when she needs him the most, he like almost defiantly cannot show up. And that has taken a piece of her every single time. So the fact that she has still been sacrificial and supported him in the world, what that does to her psychologically now, I actually have a lot of empathy for her going back and remembering all these times where she was sacrificial to a man who ultimately wasn't worth being sacrificial to. I'm not saying like he's not worthy, but in the sense of whatever deal and partnership they had, like you were saying, they had two different versions. And actually, Jax fucking said this a million times, which is so annoying. But like, honestly, he said it over and over. They were always...
Jax, when he's on, he's on.
I know. I know. It's funny because him, Stassi, Sandoval, and Ariana are all cancers, one of my favorite signs. But like, that's a very intuitive sign. I think, you know, so it's like...
I'm a Cancer.
Yeah, right?
I actually have the same birthday as Stassi and Ariana. So I'm cosmically connected.
Yeah, well, I love Stassi the first couple seasons. She was so authentically herself. And then when she was so obsessed with power, but she also like kind of did have this higher perspective where she wanted everybody to be their highest self and including herself. But the way that she went about it was just like... You know, she was in her 20s, which is the wrong way. And then she became this like weird other thing for several seasons. It was so bizarre to watch her evolution. But I will say that her and Ariana and Tom had this weird hatred for each other because there were so many similarities. And Jax. Like, here are these intuitive people going against their own intuition. And like, what does that do to you?
Yes. So there's so much there. And I want to make sure we don't lose this thread because you brought in something really important, which is Ariana repeatedly sacrificed herself for someone who wasn't sacrificing in the same way for her. And so there is this question for me in all of this about...
And I want to say I've done that a million times. Sorry, excuse me.
Right. So here's this woman who wants to find someone where they're going to have their own private world of unabiding loyalty. And isn't it interesting that she chose Tom for this? Like someone who's ultimately going to be disloyal. So there's just for me, one, the question of what was it in her that chose to show up for a man who wasn't going to be loyal to her? And by the way, and I'm not saying this in a blaming way, but there were a lot of red signs she ignored at the beginning. You know, that this guy, like there are lies he got caught in relationship to her on the show. Like I remember when Kristen... Ariana and Tom finally had the big blowout in the back alley of Sir. Ariana says to Kristen, he told me you guys were breaking up. And Kristen was like, well, that's not true. And like, they kind of look at Tom. He gets caught and his eyes kind of dart around. He's like, oh, I don't remember saying that. And by the way, the bottle girl from Vegas said that he had said the same thing to her. So I'm just saying like right there, Ariana had information. I mean, above and beyond the fact that he was cheating on Kristen with her, she had information about him lying to her, right? So she was clearly invested in sticking this through with this guy. So of course, there's the question of like, why? But one thing I want to say about that too is that what's so fascinating to me about that is it puts her in this position, right? Where... She, because Tom like is a spaz and a mess and disloyal, she throughout the whole show is constantly having to manage him and his messes, like from Miami girl straight through to not coming home to comfort her when her grandmother dies. She's having to spin tall tales. And what's so fascinating to me about this is that this is a woman who is adamant that she does not want to be a mother. And yet she chose this man-child who she is essentially mothering. Like, that's the archetype I feel in her in this relationship. She, almost like Sarah Connor is what it feels like. Like, in that us against the world, like, I'm the warrior mother who's holding shit together at home. And I'm dating little John Connor who's, like, running around playing with guns. And I have to reel him in. So I'm just sort of, like, fascinated by... Again, Ariana choosing a disloyal man-child to be so fiercely loyal to in a way that puts her in a position to be in this sort of mother energy when she actually claims she doesn't want to be a mother in the first place. And I think that's a whole other topic to get into, like Ariana's relationship to motherhood, mother energy. Again, also bringing in the fact that there's this weird twisted matriarch looming over this whole show in Lisa Vanderpump.
Yeah, I love what you said about that. Like, there are different versions of secrecy and his sort of selfish versus her sacrificial one. I do think of the Hierophant card when I think of how she views this whole situation, or like the I do believe that that's her version of stability and security. I do believe that, and safety. I believe that that's what she believes to be like, but it's a pact and you're making a deal and you're not doing that alone. And for me, it's when I think of the Hierophant card in Ariana, I think of like, I'm sacrificing the lesser for the greater picture. So yes, we met upon a lie because we were together when you were with somebody else. But she even says like, he told her they were on a break at the time too. So they started out on a lie. And at some point she decided to sacrifice the lesser for the greater, because a part of her, and I have a lot of empathy for this because I've been her, by the way, when you meet somebody like this, by the way, because I have, and you fall so head over heels. And if you're struggling at any point in your life with your own identity, and here's somebody whose energy is so dominant, it is very easy to just fall into the like vortex of what feels like love and what feels like a roller coaster and what feels like quote unquote security and like my home. I feel that when she met him, she felt that he was her home and that they could create these bonds together. What I think she would hope that they would be sacred bonds, but they ended up just being very manipulative pacts that put both of them in shackles, codependent shackles, in the way that I'm viewing it. But they didn't know that at the time. Neither one of these people are bad people who came into this with bad intentions. These are two people who desperately want love. They just share and express love in two different ways. I would definitely say that they had the same worldview and they had the same philosophies of group dynamics and people, and they could dissect other people's personalities and how people are very similarly like best friends. And I think that they had a soul bond for sure, but I don't think that they were getting their romantic needs met. Those are two very different things. But just to defend her falling into this is just, it's so blinding when you're with somebody who is the magician. Like, it is so blinding. It is near impossible to be able to find your center, especially if you're just grieving the loss of your father, who was your security. I think she was looking for security and willing to sacrifice parts of herself because she thought lesser for the greater. She thought at some point it would pay off. But that's what I want to say about that, is that I think these two people both wanted to be loved deeply. And I think that when they weren't loved the way that they wanted to, she continued to ride for him and he started to get angry and act out in different ways. And when I saw him in season 8, when Jax had left, he'd really been like, it's working. What I'm doing is working. It's working. I'm now on top. Jax is gone. It's starting to work. I can get more of what I want. I can get what I want. I can get what I want. Meanwhile, I could see her fading away, but I never really felt that she was never fading away. Like, if you ask me about watching them over the years, I never felt like she was fulfilled or getting her needs met. That's just me. I feel like she was just trying to catch up with the whirlwind that is being presented. Not to say she's a victim and didn't have choice and didn't have that. She didn't, but she and myself included, like I feel like it's a karmic cycle she had to go through to find herself, because I think she's more empowered now than she's ever been before. And that's what I think.
Yeah, I agree with you. I've actually gotten a specific intuitive hit for her that like she was, I mean, even though they were mismatched and they were on different waves, I feel for her like she was meant to meet Tom. She was meant to be with Tom, and he is like here to help her on her journey for sure. And now I'm hearing that actually she was here for him. Again, I worry for both of them that they're actually not going to learn all the lessons they can learn from this, but that's aside. I'll put that aside for a moment. What I want to bring into this, in listening to you speak, the question or like the possibility or the thing that I was so drawn to. So yeah, if we sort of trust this impulse in Ariana to find that like ride or die, like comrade in arms where we can be hiding in our bunker and it's us against the world, I think where things went wrong for her on an unconscious level was her willingness. And I'm not even talking in terms of Tom. I'm talking big picture, like with anyone she might meet in this way. Her willingness to lie for them. That's where I feel like things may have gotten tricky for her. And I start to get curious, like what would it have meant for Ariana, or what would it mean for Ariana to stand for that type of love with someone, but to be unwilling to lie for them as part of the pact. There's something about like
yes.
the lying where I think she led herself astray. And it's almost like it kind of reminds me of the bulldozer situation. And obviously Tom went to Vegas to bulldoze rather than be with her to help her through her grief over her father. And I remember Lisa really saying to Ariana, like, why don't you take more of a stand and really let him know, like, you need him. And Ariana, I forget exactly what she said, but basically she said that that level of vulnerability, like, it just feels, I don't know what her words were, but what I got off it was just like, it's too dangerous. Like, I can't risk it. I can't put it out there. And it's almost like, when I feel into this possibility of Ariana taking a stand for the type of love she wants, but refusing to lie for it, it almost puts her in that same vulnerable position that like really asking Tom to be there for her would have put her in. And almost this feeling of like, I'm not going to like, the man's not going to come through for me here. That's where I'll get left. And it's almost like, yes, she feels like she has to make that deal with the devil in order to get that abiding love. And in her mind, she thinks this is her acting in service of that abiding loyalty and love. But I hope what she's learning is that she actually betrays it there. And what I want to say to her, it's almost like your deepest partnership is into this quality of abiding loyalty and loyal love. That's got to be the North Star. And it's almost like the men organize around that rather than you organizing the love around the man. And I think that's where her true empowerment can come from. If Ariana could really own, like, I am a vessel for this, like, abiding loyalty and force of love, and I will welcome in the man who will stand with me here in honesty and without compromising my deeper integrity or morals, that's where I feel like true partnership will be for her.
This is such a mirror of society. And I forgot to bring this point up. What you just said is exactly true. And by the way, I, as a woman, just speak to other women yesterday, very powerful, beautiful women, where we both say, like, until I step into my own authority, and the reason why I don't step into my own authority is because I'm afraid I will be alone. As a woman, if I stand in my power, will I be loved? That is something that's like, because when women, but then if you don't, as a woman, if you don't step into your power, eventually you start acting out and you end up becoming like a bitch, or like it's manipulative, or it's like this, that, the other. And we see that so often. And so that's what people think women in their power is. And it's the opposite. It's like literally slow. It's receptive. It's like, I'm owning my authority. And I feel that this particular show, like when you watch season one, I was in LA at that time, the world responded to men and like, women, like that behavior, having to be like these girls having to be a certain size and wear these dresses at Sir. And like, that was something that was challenging for me to watch, and how Lisa played a role in this and how it was like acceptable for women to be slut shaming each other and all of this stuff. Like, I'm watching this in 2023 before the world changed. And as these archetypes are allowed to get away with certain things, and the world is starting to say, no, that's not okay, no, that's not okay, they're all having to be accountable at some point for how that's affecting. And so it does sort of play into what you just said about Ariana. Is also not just about Ariana, but it's about the feminine and what's been going on in society over the course of whatever, 12 years or so that the show has been on, probably longer than that, I'm not really sure. But like, it is actually a mirror to what I think is happening in the world. And the Toms, like the Trumps and the people that are acting out, are getting called out now. And the women are having to navigate, how do I stay feminine and be in my power? What do I really want? Do I even know what that is? Am I acting out against other women and being in this competitive cycle where, because these women were very horrible to each other also throughout the show. So it was very hard to watch. And so I'm curious, and I'm really hopeful that this show is such an impact on society, because hopefully we're starting to see, like, because you'll see in the comments, like, well, wait a minute, you guys are all horrible to each other. Well, wait a minute, the girls are still bullying each other. Well, wait a minute. And just really starting to notice that it's not just like these people did these things. It's the society that they were in that said these things were okay. This world said it's okay to cheat multiple times, and then eventually you'll get, you know, scolded by Lisa or somebody, but you'll eventually get away with it. So Tom wasn't expecting to not get away with it. Everybody else got away with it. So it's fascinating because I think it is a mirror. I really do. As you were saying that, no, as you were talking, I was like, oh my God, this is even my journey as a woman. As what he's saying, like what Ariana's going through is a big part of like my journey too. Like when you want to be loved, you will sacrifice like, you know, a lot.
Yeah. I mean, not just Tom, I think Raquel too also was like trying to learn the language of the show and kind of thought, oh, well, this is what they do. And, you know, people get away with it. And I think to your point, yeah, kind of like what I was saying, I want to stay with Ariana for a moment, but just to quickly touch on what you brought in at the end, like my sense of Tom to this day, I do not think he gets it. Like, I don't think he gets he's not getting away with this. I think he still thinks this is going to blow over. And he's going to go back to being Tom the Magician. And he has not grasped yet. Like, the jig is up. We are seeing the assistant who's hiding under the floorboards. We see the rabbit that's hiding underneath the secret flap in the hat. It doesn't work anymore, Tom. And I just think he is breaking down mentally because he can't connect the fact that what he has done up until now that has worked is no longer working. Now, again, from a soul perspective, I think it's the best thing that could ever happen to him, but he has to choose to walk through that doorway. Having said that, coming back to Ariana, what's so interesting just in terms of like archetype and bringing in energy as a woman, what I was really feeling when I was talking about her devotion to this force of unabiding loyalty and loyal love, suddenly that to me, because as you mentioned, we talked about her being in the energy of the queen and the queen archetype. That's how it all links up to me. I feel like her relationship to that royal energy, to that inner queen is precisely that, this force of, yes, I would call it womanly love. And again, I mean, it's interesting to bring Sarah Connor into this. She who, I don't know what I want to say, like advocates for the world. She who, yeah, has conviction. She who does have loyalty. But again, I've already said this, but I really want to say it. But like, it just feels so clear. It can't be compromised for the sake of a man or really for anyone. And that just feels so good to me for her to name that. But that it is something that, like all of us, ultimately, we're all walking alone. Like, nothing's guaranteed. Even if we have a life partner, that person could be taken from us, you know, in a moment. So
yeah.
Our journeys, we're ultimately in devotion to ourselves and our own energy. And hopefully we bring in what's an energetic match and what's intended for us. So I just, yeah, there's something about this that feels really good. And it also brings me back around to what I was bringing in earlier about her relationship to mother energy. And I'm curious if that's something that you've felt into it all. The one thing I'll say about it right now that I think connects to all of this is that I did drop in a little bit to Ariana towards like having a newborn baby. I was like, let me just see what comes up. Because the way that she talks about it on the show, and I want to be clear, I support anyone not wanting to have kids. And I support women not wanting to have kids. If that's your truth, oh my God, amazing, go for it. This is in no way to say like all women should be married and have kids. Hopefully people get that. But the way she talks about it on the show, I've always been like, it's a little weird. It's like, it's always like, oh, babies are gross. Oh, like being pregnant, I'm like, wait a second. I'm always cocking my head like, wait, that's your issue with it? And so anyways, I dropped into her. And then, like I said, I was taking in the fact that she basically elected to be a mom to Tom Sandoval. And so when I dropped into her towards a newborn baby, like what I got off it, honestly, it was a twofold thing. I mean, I felt the part of her that just wanted to chuck the baby away. It was kind of like, no fucking way. I don't want to know it. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to see it. But when I kind of coaxed my energy as Ariana to force myself to take in the baby, it was a twofold experience around one, oh my God, this little baby is so vulnerable. And I almost could feel like this is going to open me up to a depth and force of love inside of me that, again, feels so kind of tender. And in the tenderness, like dangerous, like gentle, vulnerable, like kind of that same vulnerability that she was maybe avoiding with Tom and really making an appeal around the bulldozers. Like, this is going to open me up to a force of love inside of me that just feels so fucking dangerous. So there was that aspect of it. And then connected to that, it was also, it's literally the same thing. It's like my own vulnerability was sort of missed or played with or dropped in some way. And so it's almost like I'm not, like, don't ask me to come through for this vulnerable creature in a way where my vulnerability wasn't held. Kind of like what she said about Lala when she was tough on Lala about her father passing away at the reunion. She was like, wow, no one was really there for me, so I was just not there for you.
Oh, that was really actually beautiful what you said about the vulnerability. And like, if you can't access it, how can you, like, how will, and yet, as you were saying that, I was like, that would maybe even fulfill that deep desire to have that loyalty, literally like a blood bond, where it's like, that would be also maybe even fulfill it in a way. But I don't want to say, like, I'm 41. I don't have children. I'm extremely maternal. And I have found many areas where I become a matriarch. But in her case, and in, I think we can all relate to these people, how she related to Lisa being a matriarch and a boss, what she sort of said over and over and over again, and the way she sort of went to Lisa subserviently and really wanted Lisa's approval, like, at least that's what I gauged from it, was her view of, like, I'm going to be a boss matriarch. I'm going to create an empire, because she is a queen. But there was this misstep in, like, if you can't be in your own authority somehow, or if you're sacrificing so much for raising Tom, which she very much was, like you're saying, which I think is hysterical, if you're doing all of that and you feel like you're losing yourself a little bit, well, I'm really going to lose myself if I have a child. If I haven't met myself or met my needs or fulfilled my desires or stepped into my authority fully, whether it be creatively or otherwise, and I'm kind of already sacrificing so much to this man, what is a baby going to take from me? Who, where will I will get so lost, because there is a part of me that saw her getting lost a lot in his energy. And so did she feel safe? Did either one of them feel seen and safe? They felt seen and safe in the sense that they both had the same worldviews on the group. But like, he didn't feel seen and safe. I don't know if he's capable of feeling seen and safe the way he, I don't know that that's a satiated desire. I have no idea. But like with her, I literally could see her drifting like in the ocean, like away and away. And I saw her drift in several scenes. You know, we would get glimpses of her. She really loved celebrating birthdays. And she had these like moments of just pure beauty and joy. And that's who she really was. But the toxic environment that she was in always kind of really affected her, because I think she's deeply intuitive. I'm somebody who, if you have a front that's a guard and you look like you can't access vulnerability and emotion, that is because you have so much love. You have so much vulnerability. You have so much emotion. That's what I think. If I look like a bitch on the outer world, trust me, I'm the most sensitive person you've ever met.
Yeah. So I actually have a question I want to ask you about all this. But I also want to say one thing before I ask it, which is what's really interesting to me in terms of like what we're identifying as, yeah, this really kind of like, I think, very tender, vulnerable, gentle place in Ariana. I get so drawn to that conflict with them over the cocktail book all the time. And she said something when they were first getting into an argument about it. She said something that I thought was so telling, where she was like, look, Tom, I know the way you would do this. You would do it flamboyantly. You would do it larger than life. I want this to be really like stripped down and simple, and it's about the drink. And I was really drawn to that. So I just sort of dropped into her towards the cocktail book. And it was so fascinating, because what I felt was exactly what we're talking about. And maybe this also speaks to what you were saying about like artists doing their craft. It felt like for her, this cocktail book felt like this little gentle spark. You know what I mean? Like a nascent, vulnerable little flame that like, it felt like, even if she wasn't revealing it on the surface, it's like I'm, you know, it's interesting language that's coming through me right now. I'm giving birth to this thing and it's vulnerable for me and it's mine and it's tender. And I want it to be simple and I want it to be in my simple energy. And so I think that's part of why when Tom started coming in with his devouring flamboyance, like it really set her off, because that, you know, there's something there that I think on a much deeper level she was protecting. And I think she's protecting that on a much deeper level in many different ways, right? So I just kind of wanted to name that. And perhaps connected to that, what I want to ask you though, because I, you know, I love your kind of what I'm experiencing as kind of like your empathy and your sense of commiseration with Ariana. And I mean, I think you even use the words like in defense of her. But what I want to ask you about in terms of maybe other aspects of her, you know, for me, it wasn't just that, for example, she lied about Miami Girl to cover for Tom. I think for me, it was like going the extra mile to call Kristen bipolar, to call her crazy. She's supposed to be on medication. The subsequent seasons where they tried to ostracize Kristen from the group, they continued the narrative that she was crazy, even though they knew like there was stuff that she was like sensing that was true. Ariana definitely, you know, again, I hope this is clear. I'm not saying she deserved what happened to her. I'm not saying you lose him how you got him or anything like that. I'm just naming, though, that there, and it's not just me. I've gotten a lot of messages about it. People are talking about it. There is a streak throughout the show where she gets cruel towards others. And let's even talk about towards Tom. I mean, that scene that I'm talking about where they first argued about the cocktail book and he starts piping up and she, what does she say to him? She's like, basically something like, this is not going to be about you, you little bitch. And I was like, holy shit. The way you little bitch rolled off her tongue. And then she says to him, oh God, she's like, look at you being a bitter Betty. You've been a bitter Betty for years and it's all coming out right now. And I was like, holy shit. She is like cutting him down in a way where it's like, you've clearly been harboring some stuff. There are other examples. I mean, I remember too, when she was pissed at him for talking about when Lala went down on her in the car and she says to him, your hat annoys me, your face annoys me, get the fuck out of here. I was like, whoa. So I guess I do want to bring in, and maybe these are two different things, like what was leveraged at Kristen versus what gets leveraged towards Tom. But I want to say, like, there is some mean-spirited hate that comes through her. I mean, it came out towards Stassi, too, at a certain point. And so I'm curious for you, where does that fit in? Because to me, it's not just like, oh, she was manipulated by Tom. Like, poor innocent Ariana was manipulated by Tom and went along with his lies. It's like, she did more than go along with his lies. She rode them hard and with a cruelty towards Kristen, for example. So where does that fit into the energetic makeup of all of this for you?
It goes back to authority. It goes back to disempowering your own authority and what happens when you're around men who are not courageous at all and can't communicate. Like, he couldn't just communicate to Kristen, I do like Ariana, I'm out. He couldn't communicate because he doesn't have courage. He'd rather lie. And so she signed up for that. She signed up with him. She knows that about him. She knows that he's going to do all these maneuvering things. They're already together. So am I in Ariana's head, like, why haven't you broken up with Kristen yet? So she starts the relationship this way, where she's with this. Men like that will hate women who empower themselves because, but then they're drawn to that power. He was drawn to Ariana calling him out, by the way. And so she would be in these positions to call him out, which he very much craved, but then resented against her. But she was extremely cruel to him on several occasions where she is literally acting out all of the rage that she has for something that she signed up for. She signed up to be a part of this pact with this man who has zero courage to tell the truth. He doesn't have courage to tell the truth. Okay, so I will say the archetype of like dealing with men like this, like the passive aggressive type of situation, when men who resent women, and they usually had strong female moms, right? If they resent women, they want to be around you and they find covert ways to disempower you and to run the show. And then you as the woman, you'll go along with it for a while, eventually retaliate. And this is her way of retaliation. Then you go along with it. And every time you go along with it and they're going along with it, it becomes this sort of beast that will never get fed. So every time she did that, she was showing you exactly how she fucking felt. That was the truth. Because by the way, in that little moment when he was like weaseling his way into that book, which was so gross, she literally called it out as it was. She called him out as it was. She was like, you're being a little bitch right now. And like he was. And in that moment, she was able to say it and he received it and apologized. So she felt somewhat balanced. But then what about every other time? What about when it's permeating the next morning at coffee or this, that, and the other? And then they did have these beautiful moments where he was like giving her the coffees in the morning and taking care of her. And she had a lot, you know, like all of these different ways in which they were there for each other, which always felt more like friendship to me. But it's like personality types like him do crave that. So like she gets to do it sometimes, but then he'll resent it other times. And then she'll resent all the times that she sacrificed herself and it will come out sideways. Mm-hmm. I mean, I also found the whole thing with Lala, when he was telling the guys that, it felt like he was like, do you guys think that's cool? Because I don't. That's what I saw. Like, she gets to do that. Why can't I do stuff?
Oh, I mean, that's Tom's unconscious anthem. Women get to do whatever the fuck they want while the guys have to kind of like be pushed down, essentially. So that I always feel that as his push-pull relationship with women. You know, I mean, he said that's, you know, season 8, which I still regard as kind of like the beginning of the end for Tom. But I remember that moment with Katie where he's like, basically, you can have any feelings you want, but if I have feelings, I'm psychotic. I was like, that's it right there. Like, that's the I don't know what exactly happened to him early on. That right there is the window into the initial pattern of like, I just feel like he went through some sort of gaslighting situation, I assume with mom, but you know, whatever, with a woman where it's like, I'm going to create a situation where I get to have all the feelings and all the energy and run the show. And if you have feelings about it, you're a psycho. And by the way, Tom, like, that's what I was saying before, you're bad, you're the problem. And so then Tom learns, okay, I'll be what you want me to be. I'll be the good boy you tell me I'm supposed to be, but then fucking love me for it. And when you don't, that's where I'm outraged.
Yeah.
And like I said, I think there was a point in time when he was very young where he would have had a right to that outrage because probably something was happening that was unfair. This is the folly of life. The problem is we then take those stories to the outside world where that's no longer happening to us. When we're the ones creating the story and acting it out, right? And that's what Tom now has to attend.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it complicated for not just Tom, but for all of us. It's this, the healing journey, this is what makes it complicated, is that we're tasked with this very complicated, like, task of both taking responsibility for what we've done wrong in an unconscious and semi-conscious place as adults, while also holding compassionate space for how we got there, aka the original wound where something was done to us and we learned something that wasn't true about life. And I think for a lot of people, like Tom, for example, it's hard to hold both of those because it becomes either or. It's either I'm a shitty person for having done these things and that doesn't feel right because then there's this other thing that gets bypassed. But if I go towards the other thing, it's like you're saying, I'm the misunderstood victim who shouldn't have to answer for anything I'm doing because something was done to me and that doesn't feel right either. It's our journey, hopefully, as evolving beings who are emotionally mature to hold both spheres at once of like, holy shit, I went through something back here that was so painful. I have so much compassion for my inner child. I have so much compassion for the lies I've told myself and the unconscious ways I've been acting out. And at the same time, holy shit, I have been acting out. And what the fuck did I do? And I am so sorry for what I've done and to let it all be here.
Yes. Okay. As you were speaking, it goes back to the question that you asked me prior. What is going on with the psyche of Ariana? And I was like, to transform, in order for her to transform, she would have to, every time she said, I hate your face, I don't want to be here, you're a little pussy, da da da. Those were the invitations for her to follow through. In order for her to transform, she would have had to leave. But because I hear inside of her, what I hear in her energy is like, I can't leave, 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 I can't leave. That's something that's inside of her, like in her like solar plexus area that has nothing to do with anybody, right? Like that has nothing to do with whatever relationship she's in. She just had this like contract in her psyche, like, I can't leave, but I hate you. I can't leave, but I hate you with the way you are. You're not giving me my needs met. I can't stand you, but I can't leave. And then with Raquel, I see a little girl literally like running in an empty room, just like, where do I go? Where do I go? Where do I go? Where do I go? That's what I see. Literally like Alice, and there's all these different doors. Where do I go? Where do I go? Like literally like a swirling energy, perfect for Tom. And it's like Raquel's swirling energy just perfectly matches his like crazy kundalini, like misdirected kundalini, like unharnessed energy. But like with Ariana, it's like, I can't leave and I really fucking need to. My soul needs me to leave, but like my physical, like karmic path or whatever the fuck I'm contracted here, I can't leave. And that's what I get.
And I think you put it so succinctly and simply, and it rings so true for me. It's like what we're seeing in those moments is the disowned rage of signing, of feeling like on some level she has to sign up for something that sort of betrays herself in order to get these fundamental needs met. And so that's her lost in her own story, right? There's something there that she's avoiding. Yeah. She doesn't want to tolerate the perceived aloneness, like you said, like that might happen if she stays true to her conviction in service to this like abiding loyalty that wants to move through her. So I think, yeah, there's probably a part of her, of course, that's like outraged that she's sort of signing up for this program. And much like kind of Tom feels like his needs aren't getting met, she feels like her deeper needs aren't getting met. And yet she's sort of clinging to it like a life raft. It's interesting. So I'm so curious. I think bringing this back to the reunion and in terms of Ariana's anger, what was your read on her anger? Because, you know, there were a lot of messages and comments about the way she, and let me just preface this by saying, and I mentioned this up top, that they filmed this, I think, like 2 to 3 weeks after the whole story broke. So it was very fresh. And so I just sort of want to bring in a caveat before I say anything, that obviously I think Ariana has a total right to her rage. She needs to go through that. It makes sense that it would be so fresh and raw. So I just sort of want to put that out there as like context for this, because I imagine we're going to get into maybe if there were deeper truth, different ways she could have handled it, more empowering ways she could have handled it. Who knows where this is going to go? I just want to be clear with the caveat that like I'm not in any way criticizing how she showed up, because yes, she has a right to her reactive rage in this situation. Having said that, I did get a lot of messages from people who just felt, I mean, one, they just felt it was relentless. And two, right, that it also didn't feel like, it felt almost put on, which I had a similar experience. And I experienced, it's weird. Sometimes with her rage, it feels like cutting and true. And then there are other times where it feels like she's cultivating something that feels like a front. And a lot of what she was bringing to the show did feel kind of defended to me at the reunion. And like I said, I'm saying this because a lot of people wrote me saying the same thing. So I know this is a perception that's out there. So I'm just curious for you, what was your sort of take or initial hit on her presentation at the reunion?
Okay, obviously we all wanted her to be her queen, Ariana. We would love to, like, in a perfect world, at the end of the movie, she would have had time to process what happened. And she would have time to, like, find her center and find her power. It's, again, what I've been saying over and over. It was a disempowered rage. It was a blind rage. It wasn't powerful in the way that, like, she'll have to look back at that. And I can't imagine being in a room right after I just found out that the person I've been with for that long, and having to look at the girl who's talking to me, like I can't imagine having that much vitriol sent to me through the collective, right, saying, yes, you're allowed. Yes, be vindictive. Yes, subhuman. Like, yes, 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 yes. You're hearing all of this almost as if you have to live up to this army of rage behind you from everybody's projected like ways of which they're relating to this and how they want to take this man down. And like, you must take him down. And here is somebody who is finding her authority, or desperately needs to find her authority as a queen, and has been disempowered for so long. So when you're on the pendulum of finding who we really are, which is what we're all here to do, and we don't do it in a couple of days, it takes forever. It takes like 60 years for creative to master their craft, right? So it's like, in this world of where we're finding who we are, she's in the pendulum of going from being completely disempowered. I'm not saying she was completely, but she was disempowering herself. That was a choice she made by being with this man. And then swinging all the way over to, I'm going to go all the way to find my power through this rage. Imagine too, like, I don't think she had processing time. So I'm sure her looking at that now makes her uncomfortable, to be honest with you. Like, she went pretty low, right? And like, obviously we're the audience who's been watching this, and we want to see the end of the movie where they're able to come in with the, because Ariana was really good at crafting sentences that cut to the heart of things. She was really, really intuitively a great writer in finding these lines that she said to him in that last moment when they were in the house, like the things that she said to him, I thought were like, there were so many times throughout all the seasons where she would just succinctly say the truth. And we were all kind of wanting that. I felt like she didn't even have a voice, really. Like, I didn't even hear her. I still don't know how she feels. I don't think this is somebody who is willing to show us how, where she's really at right now, because I don't think that she's had enough processing time. So that's what I think. I just don't think that she knows. Okay, here's the other thing I have to say, and then I'll be done. To be in a room with the person that you love, who cannot be accountable, would ignite such a like blind, like when I've been in those states of rage, I've been insane to the point where like my frontal lobe is gone. I am not thinking clearly. I am not responding clearly. It's like almost like having a blackout. So I don't think that she was able, and I don't think anybody would be able to be like soundness of mind. I'm going to respond to this like a queen. Like, I just don't think it's possible personally, because he's not going to be accountable and she knows it.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, so there's several things that are coming up for me in response to all this. So it's so interesting that you're bringing up how she can have this capacity for stating the truth in such simple and clear ways. Because right when you were saying that, I was suddenly thinking about other places in the show where she lied, not even having to do with Tom. Like, so for example, I mean, this is my take on it. I guess there's no way to know. But I remember when she was having a lot of that conflict with Stassi, a lot of that stemmed from Stassi and Katie wanting her to come clean that she and Tom had signed an NDA from Randall to stay at the house in Coachella. And I mean, it's interesting, right? Because basically what they're saying, speaking to private loyalty, they're basically saying the reason why you are being so loyal to Lala is because you guys have this sort of like secret pact together where you stayed, you know, in the secret world of the Coachella house and you signed the NDA and now you've got her back till the end of time. The way Ariana was acting, it was my sense that she had signed the NDA. I was thinking about that, how squirrely she got there. And it sort of felt like another moment where maybe she compromised something inside of herself. It's also a moment, like I said before, where she started getting really kind of like cruel in the way that she shut Stassi down of like, I don't give a fuck about you. And Stassi even ended up coming to her being like, you're hurting my feelings. Like, I'm trying to relate to you in a more kind of vulnerable, sensitive way. And Ariana literally just was like, oh, well, like that's what I'm saying. There are these moments of like cruelty. But what I'm coming back to is when you talk about her relationship to truth. And I think about that moment way back in the podcast today where I was suddenly like, what would it have meant for her to like create this unabiding loyalty with Tom, but not to lie? I think there's just something with Ariana where it's like she lets herself lie, I think, to protect something. And I think it goes against something in her that I think it goes against something intrinsic in her. And I think the task for her at all times, again, is yes, to practice that loyalty, but with a deeper commitment and loyalty to truth. And then that, though, is potentially going to take her. I think that that's going to take her deeper into her love, which brings me to my second point and what you're saying in all of this, which is like, because I kind of dropped into, and again, she shouldn't have to even do this. So let me just say that. But what would it have meant for her to show up at that reunion and to sit across from Raquel and to take her in and to like not stay open to what she has to say in terms of forgiving her, but just to listen to her, to take her in, see where it takes her, meaning Ariana, like in an authentic way in that moment. And again, like what came through for me on a deeper level is like, if I drop my blame towards Tom and Raquel, and again, I have to say like, no one should have to do that soon after this is broken. But if I drop my blame towards Tom and Raquel, it brought me to almost a similar place as the baby thing of like, I have to feel just sort of the bittersweet complexity of all of this for all of us. And I can feel that for me with her. It feels like that again, it takes me to someplace vulnerable in me that is connected to my heart. Yeah, that is connected to my love of like people and humanity. And that feels, again, dangerous. That's where I can get smacked down, shut down. Again, it's that little nascent flame that feels like it could just get blown out if I don't protect it. So I feel like that's where she potentially sets herself up, where it's like, I will lie and contort myself to sort of protect this little flame. But the problem is that's where I also betray myself and set myself up to get betrayed. And it's almost like what I feel for Ariana in terms of taking her in. And by the way, I relate to this because this is true of me and I work with a lot of people like this too. I feel for her like there's this cocktail, no pun intended. There's this cocktail in her of like, yes, something that is so gentle and sweet and tender and sensitive. And then the yin to that yang, or the yang to that yin, whichever one, is there's also like this deep ferocious strength in her and power and warrior energy in her. And I think sort of the life task for her is like how those two things get integrated.
I was going to say that, and I'll say this briefly, like same for Stassis, very similar, because she actually, like what I was saying earlier about how they all change of guards of their archetype and how they end up doing the thing that they condemn. They end up doing the thing that they condemn. One of the things that Arianna hated about Stassi was when Stassi said, you can't talk to this person or you can't do that because they betrayed me. And she says, nobody tells me who I can be friends with and who I can't. The hive mentality. Arianna hated the group mentality. And now to see her at this reunion, like, you're bad. No, I will not talk to any of you. If you talk to them, like the whole thing with Lisa, like maybe I'll talk to you, maybe I won't. Like you, and this is true for all of us. We end up becoming the thing that we condemn a lot of times. It's the irony of life. And so it was interesting to see that piece of it also.
Well, and she and Tom both throughout the series, I really noticed like they will shut people down when they disagree with them. I remember that conflict when Sheena texted Arianna's mom about Tom. And basically, you know, Sheena ended up saying something which I really respected, which was like, look, I own that I shouldn't have been saying this to your mother. I don't apologize for what I said because that's how I feel. And both Tom and Arianna were like, you can't feel that way. And I was like, what? You can't tell her how she can. And they do that repeatedly throughout the show. There are these moments where they're like, you can't feel that way. And it is so interesting to me that these two, and again, this is where I feel a point of intersection between them, that these two, on the one hand, will like root for the underdog and kind of position themselves as these sort of like advocates for sort of not social justice in terms of systemic social justice, but like social politics, social justice. But then the second that you do something that interferes with their narratives, and again, for Tom, I think it's the narrative of you do anything that exposes the gap between what he wants you to see of him versus who he quote unquote actually is. I think with Arianna, it's puncturing the narrative of like whatever she's protecting in her secret world of relationships. But the second you poke around there, they both, that's when something comes in that's like, boom, like, nope, we're shutting that down. You can't do that. You can't say that. So it's just, it is an interesting, I guess you could call it contradiction, hypocrisy, contrast.
100%. It's that idea of like, that's what I'm saying about when we are not like in alignment with our authenticity of how we're going to utilize our God-given power or universal power, whatever you believe. When we're not in alignment with that, then we're just power seeking everywhere. And this is an environment where I'm sorry, but like, it's all about who's in power of each season. And Lala studied it. Lala even talked like Stassi in like episode one of one of these, I think it was season 10, where she like found the dialect of Stassi, because I feel like she's very strategic and she's like, well, Stassi was in power for a long time. So if I act like this, maybe, you know what I mean? But yeah, I just think like the rage and all of this disempowerment and like becoming the thing that you say is bad. And then the way in which Arianna shut down Miami Girl, like he would have gotten in trouble that way had Arianna not stepped in. So here she is stepping into her power, but at what cost, right? Like she's stepping into her power to be the matriarch for somebody else. So that's not,
And it's interesting. I mentioned before how it's interesting to me that you're drawing that connection between Stassi and Arianna, of both having that push-pull between like this deep sort of tender sensitivity and also this warrior energy. Because as I mentioned, I feel the same way about me. All three of us share the same birthday, which is interesting. But when I've worked with people around this and explored it in my own life, it's exactly what you're saying. It's like Arianna, in this case, uses her warrior energy to defend the contortion, right? Because she thinks that's protecting the deep sensitivity in her, right? And whereas, no, what you want to do, you want to harness that warrior energy to actually protect the vulnerability in a direct way. So I guess just to be clear, I'm suddenly hearing myself and hearing where this could be confusing. So when I say she's using the warrior energy to protect the contortion, meaning if we buy this idea that Arianna, in her place of tenderness, feels like there's something very kind of vulnerable there where she could get destroyed, shut down, or hurt. She's doing everything to kind of avoid that. So that's where she'll contort and lie, because she's scared if I stick to the truth, in this case, Tom's going to leave me. And that's going to devastate this tender, vulnerable part of me. So in a way, this feels like protection. I'm protecting myself from some feared experience of heartbreak and disappointment and abandonment. But the problem is I'm abandoning myself by contorting and lying. Whereas the true warrior mother spirit would be, I'm not going to lie for you, Tom. And then if he comes at me and like threatens to leave me, this is where I bring in the warrior energy and say, that is not okay. And if you're going to leave me, then fucking leave me, because I'm protecting this in myself and I'm not wasting this on you. Like, if you're not going to meet me here. And so it's like bringing in the warrior energy to protect the vulnerability. And that's where there's alignment. And that's where you're safe to be in the world with like your gentle, loving flame, rather than doing sort of a tap dance that's sort of a false sense of protection.
Exactly. And the ironic part is that the threat, like with the cocktail book, the threat was Tom, not everybody else. Like he was easily threatened. And when I say threat, I mean, when she does step into her power, he is threatened or wants to join and somehow be in it, not diminish it, maybe, but want to have some sort of peace in it. And that's the actual threat, not the people coming in against him. The reality that I think she knows deep within is that the threat is in her own home. Anytime that she's disempowered herself or anytime that she's been in her power and then he's threatened, that's the threat. But she knows that. So she has to protect the contortion because she's committed to this, like the Hierophant. I've decided, I've sacrificed, I've signed a contract where I'm going to sacrifice a lesser for the greater good because I see a future with this person. I see myself old with this man. So I have to like let go and protect the contortion. And that's why she freaking like lashes out at him all the time, because she's raking that contract. It's like signing, you know, it's like mob mentality, right? It's just like, you have to sacrifice so much to be a part of this contract to quote unquote feel safe. I think safety is a big thing for her. And I think she finds false safety and codependency.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the last thing I was going to say about all this, as you were talking, I really felt that part of the deep level of her rage too at that reunion is like, because Tom did more than just betray her. To our point, I mean, he had this affair, he flaunted it in a sick way right in front of her face. But then on top of all that, as we've been exploring, like his grip on reality is really like slipping. And we see him at this reunion, again, not getting it, trying to revert back to his old tricks, despite the fact that they're not working. And I feel like for her on a certain level, she's got to be seeing, you know, it's like, again, he's in act three of the movie. So she's suddenly seeing the most exaggerated, distorted version of what she's been living with this whole time. And now, as we've been exploring, he's less connected to his heart and his humanity than he's ever been. And like you just said, like the call's coming from within the house, the monster's in the house. It's like, I think part of her being disturbed is really seeing what she did sign up for, like what lived in him. And in a way, you know, if we're talking about mother and parenting, right? If we're talking about inner children, the way she kind of unconsciously, unwittingly sold out her own inner child and delivered her inner child to this household with this guy who, to your point, is ultimately unsafe. And I have to imagine there must be something very disturbing about seeing his current incarnation as a real kind of like flashing danger sign of this is how bad it got.
Wow.
And this is sort of where it could have, like how much worse could it have gotten if things hadn't blown up and been discovered? You know what I mean? In such a huge way. I have to imagine there's something very disturbing there for her and perhaps fueling a lot of that rage rather than really feeling the heartbreak and also the distress of, holy shit, what was I living with?
Ugh. If you were coaching them and the question was like, how does Ariana trust herself again? If you're in a situation like that, like if you were to coach them and that was, and how does he trust himself? I mean, I don't know. Like, what is their relationship to trusting themselves?
Well, I think the question's already been answered. If I were working with Ariana, it's like, from this point forward, never lie again. I just feel like that's her work. Never tell a lie, never protect a lie in the moment. Like those, for Ariana, in terms of self-responsibility here, those are her gateway moments. And whatever part of her pull wants to pull back from telling the truth, that's where her work is. Because if we trust what's come through here today, it feels like there's a sacred relationship to truth. Like that's where the real loyalty wants to lie. And so if she's going to forsake that, mm-hmm. I get, much like with Tom, we got to look at, why didn't you just fucking go to Ariana, like Sheena said so beautifully in the last scene, and just break up with her? That's where all the information is.
Yeah.
Whatever Tom's telling himself, we know it's bullshit. There are reasons why he just didn't come out and break up with her. That's where his work is for her. It's like, what does it mean for you, Ariana, to never tell a lie? In those moments where you're tempted to tell a lie, let's fucking look at what you think is going to happen, what you think you're protecting, because that's where your work is. And the more that she becomes steadfastly honest to herself, her whole, I mean, I feel it. Like, I'm honestly having like a clairsentient, empathic moment for her right now. When I talk about her being so committed to her sense of truth, everything in my body is opening up. And I feel her whole world is going to open up to her. Because the thing is, a lot of people might not want to talk about this. I do think she was still telling lies at the reunion. Like, I think there were things that Tom is telling the truth about. And I think that Ariana, you know, and it's fine. It's fine. I think that she is disowning, I can't think of specific examples right now, but like, you know,
it's the way that he's doing it that is so manipulative, but it doesn't mean that it's not true. I agree.
Right, of course.
That's why she's able to, but you're right. Like, to be honest, he's saying this isn't working. Like, that's true.
No, of course. I mean, I know you get this, but for people at home, like, this is not in defense of Tom at all. Yes, like I said, he uses the truth in a manipulative way, but like, even that's an example. So it's like, I think, and again, we're talking about, just to name again, like, this is so fresh. They're in the reunion. I'm not saying she should have done anything any differently, but hypothetically, and in an ideal world, we could even work with that. Like, what would it mean for Ariana to say, you know what? Actually, you are right about that one thing. I did say that, or I did do that, or that was at play in our relationship. And it's like, the part of her that doesn't want to own that, like in this moment, that feels like a certain type of pride. You know, she wants to make sure he's cast in a very specific light. She wants to, it's like, let's look at that, Ariana. Where is that coming from in you? Because like I was saying, like potentially if she takes in Raquel, I feel something in Ariana, again, that abiding loyalty, that sense of love that really can hold. And this is part of why we like her, because we see it come through on the show. There's a part of her that is willing to hold space for the complexity of humanity. And I think there's a part of her that loves deeply.
Yeah.
So let's get in there. And I think those places where she lies,
I mean, absolutely.
That's where all the information is for her.
It's actually like, it's really sad in a lot of ways. I thought the last reunion was very sad, personally. I just felt like sad for all of them. I was like, none of these people are being honest with themselves. And I mean, again, like you're saying, like it was right there, but it was so deeply sad. It was like this world that has been created has really put all of these people through. I mean, it's become a sad world, to be honest. If we're being like, it's sad. And so I will say, like, the way that Ariana was with Raquel, like, oh, Raquel, don't cry. Like, she was super sweet and vulnerable with Raquel, oddly enough. Like, she would be sort of like childlike and be like, it's okay. Like, even her voice would be like, with Raquel, Raquel brought out that sensitive, vulnerable side of her. Which is also why this is so fucked up. I have seen the part of Ariana being so sweet and so vulnerable, and I am afraid for her that the people that she did give that to are the ones that betrayed her, because I don't know where she's going to take that now. Because I do think that that is the anecdote. I agree with everything you're saying. Like, I think she is actually meant to be, I think her destiny is to be a truth teller, a poignant, poetic truth teller. That's how I see her. A poignant, poetic seer of everything and being able to succinctly name it for group environments, actually. I think that's one of her gifts. And so, like, I hope that she doesn't, like, the vulnerability that she did give these certain types of people who then threw it, you know, didn't honor their, like, sacred sort of, like, friendship in a way. I am scared to see if she sort of ends up being like, well, why should I be a truth teller if this is, you know, I hope that that's not what happens personally.
Well, we'll see. I do feel the need to bring in here that, you know, she chose these people. I mean, again, I know that she didn't know what was going on, but depending on your viewpoint, I am someone who comes from the belief that we, by and large, create our own reality. So on some sort of unconscious level, this served her. And so I think there is something here for her to explore her own relationship to her vulnerability. And when she can get into direct contact with that and truly protect it through truth-telling, through everything we're talking about, then I think she'll bring in the people who will also hold it with her. I'm a little concerned for her that she's already in a new relationship. I mean, that that feels a little, I hope that's good for her. But listen, this is what I want to say, because I know we've been recording so long already. I feel like, though, people will probably riot in the streets if we don't touch on the last 5 minutes of Raquel's, you know, final interview.
Yeah.
So maybe this will be like a 5 minute quick hit wrap up. But yeah, what was your take on her final disclosure?
I kind of like put this in a comment maybe on one of your posts already, but I really feel like it's this. Okay, we saw how Lala and James refused to feel the remorse of their own actions for even 35 seconds. It is not possible inside of them to be able to feel the consequences of what they have done, or even to admit what they've done. They kept saying like, I'm 25, or I was drunk, or like, they were like, doesn't matter. I don't have to be accountable. I cannot feel that. I will not feel that. I'm not going to allow myself to feel that. And that is exactly, okay, what drove, like Raquel's hearing, like, oh yeah, I slept with your boyfriend during this time. So she's like, okay, I'm in this world and they don't have to account for anything really, because it wasn't sincere. Like that whole apology, that, and like, get over it. Come on. That's like not real. Like if you're on the receiving end of that, that's just like, you're like, okay, fuck it. These people can do whatever they want to do. I'm going to do whatever I want to do. They keep bullying me. I think up until the last 5 minutes where she decided to tell, like to account and actually feel what had happened, I don't think she had even accessed any reality of what she was doing or how it was going to affect anyone. I think she was literally like in this blind vortex of like, everybody else gets to do whatever they want and everybody else gets to be with their person. I don't belong anywhere. I'm going to have a person. I'm going to be special to somebody. I don't care because I'm an empty well and I have nowhere else to go. I mean, she was so desperate by the time she got with this man that like, it makes total sense to me that she was just like willing to like, be like, I will risk it all for this one love because I don't feel loved by anybody else. And no matter what I do, they hate me and they get to do whatever the fuck they want. Now, I'm not saying any of that's necessarily true or justifies anything. I'm just telling you the mindset that this person must have been in to be able to like have this pathological like conversation with Ariana, where it felt so perverse to be like, well, you don't really like, you know, like that was just so interesting to me. Okay. But then to be in that moment where she's in the reunion and she's still sort of like not processing and not feeling a thing and still defensive, and she's still in allegiance with Tom. And if I'm in allegiance with Tom, and if I just do what Tom says, and if I fall in like a toy soldier for Tom, everything's going to be okay because I have nothing else. I am completely, it is like a desert inside of me. But when I'm with Tom, I feel okay. So I have to keep going in his direction because there's nothing for me over here. And so I'm not going to feel or access anything. I'm not even capable of it. I'm just going to be like, keep going towards the Tom Mecca. And then she gets there. And at some point she's telling the truth because the world is literally going against everything and like showing her, and it hits her all in that last 5 minutes. The hit I got was that something had happened between her and Tom where he maybe said, we need a break, and she felt abandoned. And so she decided to retaliate against him. And so she decided to tell the truth and be like, see, I'm not the only bad one. He made me do this. It's not all me. He made me do this. I had nowhere else to go. So that was what the sense that I got was that it took her that long to even allow herself to feel what had happened and what had been done to her. And she, in her mind, to justify it, I'm not saying again that any of this is right. This is just the psyche, the things that the psyche must do to be able to justify such sort of like pathological, detached behavior, is that I see other people do it. So it's okay, until she suddenly has to like feel her own soul and feel her own heart and actually say to the producer, this is what happened. No, we were fucking the whole time. No, this was all a big lie. No, I did this horrible thing. It hit her the moment she said it in that interview. And then you see this person like fall apart. And I have no idea where that's going to take her or how long she'll be able to tolerate that before other weird behavior occurs if she doesn't deal with the deeper issues within the inner child, because I see her as 4 years old.
Yeah, it was interesting because, I mean, obviously, like on this podcast, I've explored Raquel, and while I don't condone what she's done, I definitely have, I feel my compassion for her and what feels like a very complicated upbringing with lots of conflicting messages. And so I will say it's like, I mean, I found those last 5 minutes incredibly powerful. I didn't expect there to be some huge plot twist, so I wasn't expecting a huge plot twist. And I just found the experience of watching her disclose the truth to be very powerful and really feeling also the depth of Tom's control and manipulation to be very powerful. I thought it was a haunting last scene, just from a storytelling perspective. But it was like, I really wanted to believe that it was a remorse. At this point, I question whether what she was experiencing was actually remorse. It kind of just felt to me, I think similar to what you're saying in some ways, like I think the experience is catching up to her. I think that she also became very aware at that reunion that Tom has deceived her as well. And I think, yeah, it's sort of like if this is someone who tends to push things down and disassociate, I think even if it's not full depth of remorse, I mean, she spoke to it, like seeing the impact of her actions, seeing the consequences of her actions, the whole situation catching up with her, the embarrassment. I think the experience was catching up with her. And my take on it was, I'm having feelings. Let me direct, like through my language, direct the feelings towards where I think it's supposed to go, which is remorse and contrition. I don't know that she, I mean, and honestly, it might sound like I'm almost making her out to be like a villain. Like what's coming to me is I don't know that she on an unconscious level even feels safe to feel remorse yet. Like it feels like that might take her somewhere that she can't, her psyche can't handle yet. But it's almost like, yeah, I'm having feelings. Let me use them in a way that I think will sort of work best for me. Because what I'm also aware of, what I thought was so striking about it was, here you have a people pleaser. And I just felt like she was in the intersection of people pleasing, because on the one hand, she wants to please Tom, of course, because, you know, he's the one she loves. And as she talked about, it's her lifeline. I'm also aware she wants to please this producer, you know, who's asking her these questions. She wants to please the TV show, which in a way is a lifeline.
Yes.
And I'm also aware she wants to please the audience, you know, and the other cast member. Like Raquel is a people pleaser and she's being torn in all these different directions. So it's like when I kept hearing her say, I don't like deceiving people. Did I really believe that? No. Do I think she's been 110% honest before this moment? No. I think that, like I said, I think the situation was catching up with her. I think, yes, she's finally feeling capacity to have feelings about it. And I think she was using those feelings in that moment, like I said, in a direction that could be best for her in terms of like public perception, which again, I feel like makes it sound like I'm painting her in this manipulative light. I don't experience it that way. I don't think she's sitting there twirling her mustache, like as a quote unquote sociopath being like, how can I spin this? I think it's actually very human nature. I think like, if we're caught doing something bad, you know, it's self-preservation. She was just like railed against at this reunion. The whole world fucking hates her. Tom's going to be mad at her. It's like you said, a four-year-old. It's like, what I hear in all of it is kind of like, I'm human. I fucked up. I messed up around this. Holy shit, this is happening. And yeah, like she's, you know, she's a savvy young woman. I think she was sort of routing it. I'll say this, in the place where it will sound best for it to go, but also, like I said, where she wants it to be going. Does that make sense? Like, I think she wants to feel remorseful and maybe she'll get there. But, you know, I think it's going to take some time.
I agree.
All right. I think the last thing I just want to say in all of this, you mentioned feeling sad earlier, and I was really feeling that
a little bit ago as well, just in the sense of, you know, people keep saying Tom and Ariana are like more friends than lovers. And when I was sort of thinking about the two of them and the journeys that they're both on and how it feels like they have kind of served a karmic purpose for one another, I just suddenly did feel sad because I was like, wow, I actually do feel where these two at one point cared about each other. And it is this feeling of like, they could have been great friends. Like, they weren't meant to be lovers because, yeah, the queen isn't a lover with the magician.
Yeah.
That's like a mismatch. You know, the queen is supposed to be with a king. Mm-hmm. I don't know who the magician is with, maybe a witch or someone, but like...
But they're on the same court.
Yeah, like another magician or something. But the queen and the magician don't end up as lovers. And I just feel like they would have been great allies, cheerleaders, and friends. And in the place, even though Tom, I feel like, has taken a really dark turn, in the place where I feel like at one point they both had such a connection to heart and love. It just, I don't know, there's something about this that just feels very sad to me. And maybe just the last thing I'll say too, you know, you asked about both sort of Tom and Ariana and how they learn to trust themselves again. And I think I've spoken to this before. I think it's interesting. I think similar to Ariana, like Tom really has to, if I were working with him, I mean, it really is about getting honest about his dishonesty and finding those moments where he starts to lie and to really start unpacking that.
But to himself.
Yeah.
Like about what he wants, what would ignite. I think you nailed it in another podcast you did when you talked about sacred aloneness.
Yeah.
Like he has to find it within himself, not without.
Yeah, it's so interesting because again, as we explore them, I just see all these parallels between them because that's what I was saying. Yeah, I think he's got this relationship to sacred aloneness, but even in what we explore with Ariana, this idea of coming back to the abiding loyalty and love within her and being loyal to that energy in her first. You know, that's kind of why I was like, you know, I hope this new relationship is, you know, they both have this tendency towards codependency and enmeshment. And I feel like there's something in them where there's something around, I don't know if with her, the word aloneness feels quite as apt, but there's something about cultivating something inside themselves first and then greeting the world from that place. Again, it's the bittersweet tragedy of all this where I do feel these points of intersection where they could have been great friends. But like I said, they're writing different narratives in their lives and their narratives are not meant to overlap as lovers. So, you know, we'll see where this all goes. Molly, it has been such a pleasure and a joy to have you here. Is there any final anything you need to say just to feel complete in this moment?
I've been so excited to do this. My cousin was in town and I said I was going to be doing this. I don't think she understands how we do this, so that'll be interesting. But I took her to Tom Tom's and we, you know, she's from the Midwest. She lives in Jackson Hole, but we went to Tom Tom's and I said, I'm going to manifest Lisa for you. And we were sitting at the edge of Tom Tom's. This is during the whole thing. Okay. And I'm now new to this world and I'm like loving it. Lisa and her entire family rolls up in the Rolls Royce, where they get to park wherever they want in Santa Monica. And like royalty, gets out and walks past us. And I say, Lisa, it's so great to see you. And she looks at me and says, hello. And she goes, take it, take it, take it. And we're like, what? She meant take the photo, take the photo. We were just trying to say hi. But I just want to say that she created a world where she was literally the queen. And she is the queen of Santa Monica and Robertson at this moment right now. And when there is a monarchy, there are its court and there is always a scandal. So that's really what I believe. I think she wanted to create her own monarchy here in Los Angeles. And what a great place to do it.
Well, I know. Hopefully, I'm sort of thinking of this episode as like the completion of Scandoval in particular. But I hopefully people will not be upset to hear that. This has sort of rejuvenated my creative fire. And I definitely want to deep dive Lisa Vanderpump soon. It's not going to be specifically Scandoval related, but I really want to get into her because I just, you know, she's in all of this and yet she's never in it. Much like how she tried to rule over the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. But anyways, I'm not going to open up that can of worms right now.
Molly, you are a brilliant singer and songwriter, and you wear many hats. Tell people where they can find you or what they should know about you.
I've been working on an album for the last 3 years, and we will release that when we're ready, and it's been the most collaborative process of my life. But I'm also putting my voice studio online, so it's going to be amazing. I'm a musician, I'm a singer, and my destiny on this planet is to make sure that everybody finds their voice and allows their soul to come out. So that's what I do.
So where should people find you if they want to learn more about you?
Well, you can go to my website, mollyduranmusic.com.
Okay, great. And as always, follow me on Instagram, Jamie Stein, JamieStein. There is content there that is exclusive to there. And if you're curious about my work, you can go to my website, hollywoodreadings.com, and send me an email. I'm also very lightly on TikTok, slowly kind of navigating that world, TBD, but my handle there is housewivesempath. As always, I love hearing from you, so don't be afraid to email, DM. As always, greatly appreciated when you leave ratings and reviews, hopefully positive ones. And I will be back soon with more, and I will see you guys then. Bye.